The right wine can turn a good meal into a memorable experience. But how do you know what wine will best complement the food and appeal to your own taste? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Choosing a wine can sometimes seem tricky, but Jessica Bell is here to help. She's founder and CEO of My Wine School, and she wants to make wine accessible and fun for all of us. She joins us today from our Milwaukee studios. Jessica, always a pleasure to have you with us.
As is for me, too. Thanks, Larry.
Really appreciate you taking the time. Definitely a chill in the air, and that often means heartier, maybe richer foods.
Right. I wish I had some wines to open for you. I wish we had that spigot you could put on a computer, and I could send you wine from the Milwaukee studios.
I like that idea a lot.
Warm you up a little. Yeah, it's with the cool weather, you know, I find I tend to have a seasonal preference for wines. And in the summer and the spring, I tend to like the whites and the rosés. And then as we start to see that chill in the air, I start to lean more towards those red wines.
The bigger wines, huh?
Mm-hmm. They've got that a little bit more alcohol to warm the insides. They've got often a little bit more of a heartiness, a fuller body. That's one thing you look for when you're pairing wines with food is the weight. You pair the weight of the food to the weight of the wine. So as the food start to get bigger and fuller with our stews and our roasts and our root vegetables and carbs and fats as we try and fatten up for the winter, we want to look for a wine that's going to match that weight. Otherwise, our food will flatten the wine, if you will. It'll really be the star of the show instead of having two complementary parts to your meal. So I guess I would start with red is a good direction to go. You could definitely do whites, but just keep in mind that weight element. So if you are a white wine drinker all throughout the year, that's fine. Just look for some bigger whites, some wines that have more body to them are things like Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, maybe even a Gewürztraminer, which is from Germany and has a bit of sweetness on it. Those are the ones that are going to be able to stand up to these big dishes. But if you're going to go with red, something that I'm seeing a lot of in the market, it's really hot right now, are red blends.
Red blends. Interesting.
Yes. So meaning like rather than just having one grape in the wine, you have several grapes in the wine or anywhere from two to several. And this isn't a new concept. This has been going on forever.
Yeah.
Right, but the American consumer of wine typically, historically, has gravitated towards one grape variety in their wines because that's how we identify wine. You know, you go to a restaurant and you say, I'll have the Cabernet or I'll have the Chardonnay. So we understand wine through the grape variety. So when we see a wine that has a number of grapes in it, it doesn't have it on the label, like, I think, you know, for a while we've kind of been a bit scared of it or not sure what to expect. But with confidence, I think, in the American consumer, we're seeing more experimentation and more people gravitating towards these red blends.
I think sometimes people think, well, blend, it's not going to be as good. And it's kind of
exactly,
a cheaper
Larry.
Version.
Exactly. It's so cute. I mean, I love it. It's you know, like we said, you and I, that this has been going on forever. Blends have been a part of winemaking for hundreds, if, you know, not a thousand years. The American consumer kind of sees it as it's not pure. It's maybe the ends of everything was just, you know, an afterthought. Whereas what's great about red blends, and white blends too are really popular right now, is that when you blend in more than one grape, you start to blend out some of the edges of the wine. You start to be able to find complementary characteristics between two different grape varieties. For instance, Cabernet is known for being more of what I call angular wine. It's got those edges and it's not as smooth. Whereas Merlot has a bit more of a roundness to it, a smoothness to it. So those are two grapes that are often blended because when you put them together, they create a more round, smooth wine that tends to go down a little easier.
Sounds great to me.
So the region that started that practice of Cabernet Merlot is Bordeaux. So Bordeaux is spelled Bordeaux, and it's from France. Mm-hmm. And this is the place that started it. So it's a great place to start. I think there's a misconception that Bordeaux wines are expensive and not approachable, whereas in fact they are actually there are the expensive ones, but there is a lake of inexpensive wines from Bordeaux. Unfortunately, I think because the American consumer is a little intimidated by it, we don't see a lot in the market. But just an interesting fact about Bordeaux: if it was a country, this one region in France, it would be the fifth largest producer in the world.
Wow!
So it makes more wine than most countries out there.
Very cool. A lot of it.
Yeah.
Our guest. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to add, if Bordeaux is difficult to find, there are a number of domestic blends that are going to be a little bit more fruit forward. And I'm happy to give some names of some.
Yeah, give us a couple names.
Yeah, one that is fairly easy to find is Bogle, B-O-G-L-E. It's going to be a very, what I call, ripe, almost sweet version of a red blend. And another really popular one, easy to find in all of the markets, even grocery markets, is Folie à Deux.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like the sweeter ones, which are going to be the domestic ones, I would say look for Portuguese and Spanish blends. Those are typically are a little easier to find. Mm. And I found one that is called Lab, L-A-B, from Portugal. I found it at Downer Wine and Spirits for $9.99. So that was a fantastic find.
A very good find. Jessica Bell, founder of and CEO of My Wine School, based in Chicago and Milwaukee, our guest today as we talk with her about wonderful wines during this fall season, the great pairings that you can have. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or a question or comment there, or just call at our number, which is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, and we have a Facebook question, an email question, and somebody on the line. So let's go to the phones. Let's go to Mark. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling from Pulaski.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a little problem with a lot of wines. It's when I go to the stores. I don't espouse to be any great wine connoisseur. I'll be first off. And when I go to a store, inevitably they always got these blasted sulfites in it. And all I got to drink is like a couple of regular glasses, and I come up with a roaring headache. So it's gotten to the point where I'll look around, see if I can find some that doesn't have it. Very rarely, if ever, do I ever find it that they don't, at least in regular stores. So I'm down to either one, make it myself, or two, of which I haven't done yet, is go to wineries. You know, and we have wineries around Wisconsin, and maybe the local ones and the what do you call them, micro wineries or whatever you call them. Maybe they don't use them, but I know when I go in the store, every one of them has it. And I've never thought of trying maybe cooking with it. Maybe it might settle down that effect. But I know just drinking any wine with sulfite, as soon as I see sulfite, I put it back.
Well, I'll give you a little background on the sulfites, especially it sounds like you're reading the labels, which is great. By law, every wine has to put contain sulfites on the label. And that is because every wine, whether they add sulfites or not, have sulfites in them. Because it's actually, even if a winemaker didn't add sulfites to the wine, it's a natural byproduct of making wine. So the reason why it's on the label is because that severe asthmatics, if they consume sulfites, they can get a very severe reaction. And so that's the reason why it's on the label. Now, you have different degrees of sulfites. So you have some that are no added sulfites. That would be the winemaker has not added any into the wine. And so that's what you probably want to look for on your wine labels, that will put it at the lowest. Now, I will say sulfites, what they act as are antioxidants and antiseptics. So in other words, what it does is it preserves your wine, it makes it taste fresh and fruity, and it keeps it stable, which is always a good thing. So judicious use of sulfites is actually a good thing for wine. Unfortunately, if you do have reactions to it, obviously it's not a good thing. So Another thing to look for is wine made from organic grapes. Again, by law, the amount of sulfites that a winemaker can add is at a relatively low level. So you're going to have a lower level of sulfites. Now, I will say, in the spectrum of wine, whites and sweet wines tend to have more sulfites in them. Again, as an antiseptic and something that keeps a wine stable, wines with sweetness need more stabilization, so you don't have re-fermentation going on. So as you're drinking wines, if you're noticing you're getting a stronger reaction from white wines than red wines, it probably is sulfites. However, if you're getting a stronger reaction from red wines than white wines, it's actually probably not sulfites. It's probably something else, and in the science community isn't even sure what that is. They think it might be something called tannin. They think it might be histamines. So there's different ways around that as well. But, it's never a fun experience to have that reaction, whether it's headaches or your nose running or, unfortunately, all wines are going to have just a touch of sulfites. If not, some are going to have a lot of sulfites in them.
There you go.
So, those are maybe some places to start. Hopefully we find some wines for you so you can keep drinking it.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We got a Facebook question from Kevin. He said, this dish called roasted acorn squash stuffed with cheese tortellini is one of my favorite meals to make in the fall when the acorn squash is nice and ripe. And most importantly, it's delicious. Any idea on what kind of wine might pair with it? It's a cream-based sauce, so I would think a white wine maybe?
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. You know, we were saying red wines, but that with the root vegetables and the cheeses on it, what I see going well with that is something with a higher acid, which would be a white typically. And then also, I really think a full-bodied white, as I was saying before, would go really nicely with it. Even something with a bit of a nuttiness in it. Southern Rhone whites, so that's Rhone, R-H-O-N-E, is from France, and it they have these white blends that are full-bodied, a little bit higher alcohol, a good nutty, a floral note to them, which I think would go really nicely with that. Those might be hard to find, though, so in absence of that, something that's everywhere is going to be a Chardonnay. Maybe look for a French Chardonnay, so you get a little higher acid, and I think the higher acid's going to help. So those would be my first go, an easy to find and a not so easy to find one.
Chris in Centerville, your turn. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. One thing I just wanted to mention is there's a great selection of local wines just all throughout the state. The one that I've found where my favorite wine is out actually in the Centerville area. It's called the Almaro Winery.
Ah, yes. That's on my list today. I wrote down a list of Wisconsin wineries that I actually have not been to all of them. But I, Chris, this is a great topic. I was one of three judges for the Wisconsin State Fair, Wisconsin wine competition. And so we tried 150 wines in one day.
Whoa.
And I know it was a good thing and a bad thing the next week because my teeth just hurt from all the acid in the wine. But there was a gentleman there who knows his stuff about Wisconsin wine, and I asked him for a list of wineries that he's really impressed with what they're doing. And that one, Chris, is on it. Almaro is on it. And I am looking forward to visiting it myself.
My personal favorite out of their collection is the Rosa. I don't know if you've had it or not. But
no,
great.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate because these are local wines, so we'd think we'd be able to find them here in Wisconsin, wherever you are in Wisconsin, and yet most of these are sold at cellar door or in their communities. So, a couple months back, I did an article for a magazine on Wisconsin wines with Wisconsin cheeses, and I struggled to find the Wisconsin wines. I actually had to contact the wineries themselves and ask them for samples so that I could help write the story. But I haven't tried it, but it's definitely on my list. A couple other, I'll share with you what's on my list. So if you guys are interested, and I haven't been to all these. This is coming from an insider in the Wisconsin wine world, but Riverbend Winery, Ledge Stone, Fisher King, and Danziger. Danziger actually won the Wisconsin State Fair competition. And then one that I like also that wasn't on his list, but Parallel 44, that's in Kewaunee. That's making some good wines as well, up near Green Bay, I believe.
Hmm. All right. I'm writing all these down. Oh, man.
Makes for a good weekend. Go wine tasting in the state.
Absolutely. Jessica Bell, our guest, founder and CEO of My Wine School, based in Chicago and Milwaukee. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jessica Bell, founder and CEO of My Wine School, based in Chicago and Milwaukee, our guest today. Always great fun to have her on to talk about wines. This time of year, our meals are kind of starting to change a little bit, I think, from the summer. A good time to talk about wines, and those can be paired with your favorite meals. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And how's My Wine School doing?
We were traveling all summer. We were working in the Republic of Georgia and Spain, and we were in Napa as well. So we've been all over, and we're getting settled again and working on a new project that I'm really excited about. And I actually would love to share it with your listeners, if that's okay.
Yes, please do.
And I'd love to hear what they have to say about it. It's a new concept. I really haven't seen it out there. What we want to do is show people how to do your own wine tastings, wine classes in your homes with your friends.
Okay.
And so we're calling them DIY wine parties. And we're working on two concepts right now, and with more coming. And for the first 6 months to a year, they're going to be free. And we want people to check them out, do them at home, see what they think. The idea is that this is going to be, instead of a book club, it's a wine club. So you can get together with your friends, or maybe for a bachelorette party, or for a girls' night out kind of thing. It's an excuse to get together with your friends, but have a little structure, a little fun, a little activity with it. Learn a little bit about wine, but really the focus is about what wine is all about. Is about bringing you together with your friends and family, and visiting and having a good time.
So do we go to your web page?
Yes, we're going to be posting the first two at the end of the month. So those will be coming up. But in the meantime, they can either, get us on Facebook, Twitter, start following us, or our website has a newsletter so that they can be aware of it, because it'll be free. I mean, they'll be available for anyone to download, everything you'll need for the party, so you can throw them yourself at home. And we recorded a couple segments last week, and they should be up. They're actually going to be up on Time Warner On Demand.
Cool.
Yeah, so you can actually download them there, too, or just watch them from Time Warner. But they'll also be on our site within the next couple weeks.
Fun thing to look forward to, and we have a link to your site on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. But if you go to My Wine, if you go to My Wine School, that's going to pop up, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're gonna we've got the news. You can sign up for the newsletter, and then, like I said, about next week or so, we'll actually have some of the new videos up with the handouts. We have handouts and downloads. You can even have your own email invitation. We already got that written out for you, so you just have to copy and paste it into an email and send it off to your friends. We're making it DIY, super easy.
Great. Well, Matthew in Wausau has a question for you, so let's go to Matt. Hi, Matthew.
Hi. You ready?
Yes. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, my father, he makes some wine in his free time, and he tends to do a lot of things that are on being seasonal, because he has a lot of fruit wines and things.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if there was any seasonal fruits or vegetables for fall that your guests could suggest maybe using for flavor.
So do you use the seasonal seasonal fruits or vegetables, you're saying, for the wine or for cooking?
Oh, for the wine, he's made like beet wine in the past and rhubarb wine, things like that. Maybe just something seasonal for this time of year.
Right. What's interesting is that, you know, we don't live in the a climate that's perfect for grapes. So making wine from other fruits and vegetables is possible. The only thing you always need is sugar. So the great thing about grapes, the reason why grapes make such good wine is that they're one of the few fruits that can achieve up to about a third of its weight in sugars. And also it maintains its acid. Acid is something really important for the balance of a wine. So what you want to look for are fruits and vegetables that can achieve high sugars as well as have some level of acid in it. I mean, if you think of any refreshing good drink, it's got acid in it or something that gives it a bounce or a lift in your mouth. So those are the types of things you should look for. I unfortunately am not an experienced winemaker from that perspective, from any perspective, quite honestly. I like to drink it and talk about it, but I don't make it. I'd love to make it one day, though. As far as which vegetables are used or fruits, you know, I'm not sure. But I know that in Wisconsin we have a good amount of mead being made, which is from honey. Being a judge on the Wisconsin State Fair, I tried lots of fruit wines. And the one that really stood out as making great fruit wines was cranberries. And it goes to the point I made before that it's able to get the concentration of sugar, and cranberries have fantastic acid on it. And I will admit, I went into the competition thinking, oh, fruit wines, there's no way that these are going to, you know, be as good as my, you know, what I'm used to, my wines. And I was really pleasantly surprised by the quality of the cranberry wines that we were tasting it. So perhaps you can get your hands on some cranberries. That's good fall, you know, for Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. Good idea.
And they're beautiful, too. They're pink wines. And, like, yeah, you got the cranberry sauce on the table and a nice glass of cranberry juice and turkey and stuffing. Man, that sounds delicious.
Yeah. I mean, you got, you know, there's pear wine. Judith was mentioning she's had pear wine and apple wine and cherry wine and elderberry wine. She's quite the wino. No.
I know, Judith.
She's laughing in there.
We get along great.
She's laughing in there. Oh, my goodness. So there are lots of fruits you, yeah, certainly you can pair with. We had several comments. A Facebook comment from Connie: I'm really enjoying all the blends. My favorite is Middle Sister Rebel Red. Connie likes Parallel 44
great.
Is awesome. And
yep.
She likes Von Steel and Algoma. They have some nice blends, too.
Oh, okay. I'll try those, too. Yeah, another place that Wisconsin's doing some great things. Also, Washington State is a great place to look for something new where you get really pure fruit, really fun wines, and at good prices.
And an email from Jeremy who says, I find myself continually being drawn to Chilean wines. Does that say anything about my taste or palate?
You got a good palate.
Yeah, there's some great ones out there.
No, yeah, and what's great, again, Chile has one of the most perfect climates for growing grapes. They've got lots of sunshine. They've got enough cool air coming off of the ocean. It's a cool ocean front right on the coast of Chile. They've got tons of mountains. It's almost, you know, the whole country is mountainous. So you get the ideal place for making wine. And so you get a really pure fruit, not a lot of disease or mold is a problem there. And labor and land is relatively cheap, and because they don't have problems, they don't spend money trying to fix the problems. As a result, the wine is at great prices. So I find you can get a fantastic wine from Chile, sometimes under $10. I mean, you know, standout wine at $15. I had the honor of being down there a couple years back, and it is one of my favorite regions, and definitely one of my favorite places for value wines.
And you've had, you know, you talked about not making your own wine, but you've had so much experience, and we've talked about it in past shows, but for those who haven't heard you before, I mean, you have sort of like the PhD or beyond of wine tasting. And
PhD in wine drinking, huh? That takes a lot of wine drinking. Yeah, I've just gone where my interests have lied, and it's brought me to some pretty interesting projects, and I feel very fortunate to have seen everything from, like I said, the Republic of Georgia this summer, where wine was started. I mean, it's the birthplace of wine, and they're still practicing the same winemaking techniques that they used 6,000 years ago. So that was really, really opened my mind to understanding winemaking. And then up, you know, on the other end of that spectrum, I was in Napa this summer, where you get state of the art, you know, you get marketing and the glitz. But Napa was really interesting this summer. It's a cool town. Great food, great wines, and the people are just super laid back. It's, you kind of like get into this way of living that you're like, I could do this. I could live here. You just got to have a lot of money. It's not cheap.
Well, Lee in Delafield has a comment. Let's go to Lee. Hi, Lee.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Good
thanks
morning,
for
Lee.
Calling.
All right. I'm interested in, you know, I spent 4 years, I was stationed in Germany for 4 years. And I really got to loving the German Glühwein during the fall festivals and whatnot. Can you recommend something that would be comparable around here or something I could mix and make up? Are you familiar with Glühwein?
Glühwein. It's spelled G-L-U?
G-L-U-H. G-L-U-H-W-E-I-N?
I'm not familiar with it.
Kind of a spice wine.
Or a mulled wine, a German mulled wine?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is why I love wine. You learn something from everyone. Everyone has something to teach me, is my philosophy. So Glühwein, was it a red or a white?
Red.
A red. Okay, yeah. So it sounds like kind of like a mulled wine.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can add some brandy to it.
Okay. That's my kind of wine.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you could really find some mulled wine recipes, you know, on the internet and stuff. And just what you'd want to do is German wines, what they're known for is being really light, especially reds, really light in body and high in acid. So if you wanted to look for something like that locally, a Pinot Noir would fit that bill. Or even a German red, if you can find them. They're just tough to find. Or maybe an Oregon wine or a Washington wine where it's a cooler climate like it is in Germany. So you want to look for, and then you don't want to spend a lot either on these wines because you're adding all this other stuff back to it. You're going to lose what you'd be paying for, which is the flavor. So same thing with sangrias. You want to spend about $10 to $12 at most on your bottle of wine. So I think you could replicate that experience at home.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks, Lee, for calling.
Yeah, and thanks for teaching me something.
Email from Tyler. Tyler says duck season, hunting season is underway or mere days away. Do you have some suggestions for what wines to pair with rich, dark meat or waterfowl?
Mm. Okay, I've got a kind of a middle of the road suggestion, and then I've got a off the beaten path suggestion for you. I would say Syrah is great with duck. Syrah is kind of looked over, I think, in the U.S. a lot, but it is California makes great Syrah. So does Washington. Or if you like more of a rustic Syrah, you're going to look to France in the Rhone Valley, R-H-O-N-E. That's a start there, Syrah. And then what I love with duck, this is a little off the beaten track, and it's a very specific taste, is sherry. But not the sherry that you might think of. It's dry, and it's dark. And it's what the Spaniards really love with their... They often have a sherry glaze that they'll put on their duck, made from these dark, just fully flavored cherries. And the two that are going to be darker, one's called Oloroso. It's O-L-O-R-O-S-O, which means the big smelly one. And then Amontillado is spelled A-M-O-N-T-I-L-L-A-D-O. And those two aren't your typical sherries. They're going to have a touch of that sherry taste, but they're fully flavored. They're kind of like the equivalent of the big Cabernet of the sherry world. They're delicious, and the great thing about it is because they're totally overlooked, you can get a fantastic quality one, you know, 90 plus points for $10 to $12. And they last. You can open it and keep it open for a good month, and it's not going to change much.
Oh, wonderful.
Making you hungry, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And
actually,
thirsty.
Judith just texted me and said, I'm drooling here.
Me too.
Oh, well, Julie has enjoyed some Malbecs and would like to know more about Malbecs. Where do they come from?
Sure.
How would you describe the taste?
Sure, no problem. Well, what's interesting is that I think most wine drinkers today associate Malbec with Argentina. But in fact, Malbec came from Bordeaux. If you were listening to the program earlier, we were talking about the French region in Bordeaux. It's in the southwest part of France, just right on the Atlantic Ocean. And that's where Malbec really started and got its popularity. Now, throughout time, though, Malbec doesn't really do well in Bordeaux. Bordeaux tends to be wet, humid, and a little on the cooler side, not cold, but cooler. And so Malbec doesn't thrive there. Now, a number of different types of grape varieties were brought over to the New World, including Argentina. And Catena is a producer in Argentina, spelled C-A-T-E-N-A. And it was really Catena in Argentina that decided Malbec does really good here. So he planted something like, I don't know the exact number, it was like 100 different clones of Malbec in Argentina, and to see which ones would do best in Argentina. And he found the best ones. And then from there, Argentina has become the home of Malbec. And so when we talk about Malbec from, say, Bordeaux in the southwest of France and Argentina, they're different because the climates are different. Even though they're the same grape, the warmer, dry, desert-like climate of Argentina is going to make these Malbecs purple in color. They're going to have black fruits, rich spices on the nose. And then on the palate, they tend to have a little bit higher alcohol, a real smooth mouthfeel. Some of them can have a touch of a tannin, which is that drying sensation, but really ripe, fresh black fruit, sometimes some red fruit on it too. And it does well with oak, which means when you add oak to a wine, you might get spices like vanilla and chocolate and smoke, depending on the oak level. But yeah, so those, that's what a Argentinian Malbec is like. And so what's been interesting is that the rise of Argentinian Malbec has provided a marketing for the French Malbec. So now you're starting to see a resurgence of French Malbecs as well.
Interesting.
And yeah, they're going to be a little bit lower in alcohol, lighter in body, and a little bit more of a red fruit, maybe some black fruit, but just not as ripe and plush and velvety as the Argentinian Malbecs.
Well, let's go to Crystal in Hamburg. See what's on Crystal's mind. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I was at friends the other day, and there was a local fella who makes wine from plums, and it was really good.
Yeah.
So I thought I would share that with you.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Crystal. I would say, you know, plums have great acid in it, right? You know, you got that acid we were talking about. You get the sugar. Those are the things you want to look for. That's why maybe beets, when I heard beets, they don't have as much acid in them. So that, you know, I'd steer away from. But fruits with high acid, I would see, Crystal, that could be a good wine.
Sounds good, Crystal.
It was good.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Bill in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I was just in Germany, and we got a Rhine River tour that ended at a wine shop, and they had a large selection and tasting of the Eiswein. And I'm interested in buying some, but is it really worth $80 actually 80 euro a bottle plus shipping?
Yeah. You know, there's a reason why they're expensive. Eiswein in Germany, by law, is going to be produced because the grape stay on the vine until into the winter. And
those grapes are really little.
Right. And you got it, Larry. Did you see someone in England when you were there, Larry?
I did not, but I took a wine class a long time ago, and I remember the conversations about the Eiswein. The amount of work that they have to go through for those makes the cost. You can see where the cost is located.
Exactly. There's lots of work, and then, like you said, they're frozen when they're brought into the winery, and
yep.
and as a result, you can only squeeze so much juice out of those grapes. So all the work that's going into it, along with a little supply of juice, creates a high price. Yep. Now, I will say, if you like the flavor and don't want to spend, you know, the equivalent of $100 or more on your ice wine, there are places in, say, California, where they can do it, if you will, artificially. So they'll bring the grapes in and freeze them in the vineyard. I'm sorry, in the winery, because we don't have the laws that Germany has about ice wine. So you can find them a little cheaper. They're not going to be as concentrated. They're not going to be as complex. I mean, that's what you pay when you pay a higher price. You're paying for concentration, complexity, you know, all those things, balance, and a long length at the end. If you're okay with not having that, then you can find some that are the same style, but just not high, as high yeah. in
I think Wallersheim quality. Actually makes some. In fact, mm-hmm. I'm sure they make some.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how they're priced.
I'm not either. We'll have to, hopefully, someone knows. They can let us know.
Yeah. Becky at Appleton, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I have two questions. One is about appetizers. I'm making some bacon stuffed dates. Well, they're bacon wrapped dates stuffed uh-huh. with cream cheese. And the other appetizer is a roasted pepper with goat cheese and Spanish paprika. I'm wondering what mm-hmm. wine I could pair with that. And my second question is, what would I pair with Indian food? What kind of wine?
Okay. So we'll start with the appetizers. We were just talking about Germany a couple of times, so I think my mind is in Germany right now.
Yeah.
And when I was hearing the bacon and dates and I think you said cream cheese, Riesling was the first thing that came to my mind. If you think of like the sausages in Germany, you serve it with a nice Riesling. It's awesome. It's got a lot of acid. It's going to cut through all that fat, which we love in the bacon. And the dates have sweetness, so the Riesling has a little bit of sweetness that's going to pair nicely with that. Riesling just goes fantastic with any cheese. So I would say the Riesling for that one. Now, the other one was pepper and paprika, and there was something else in there. Right? What was the third ingredient?
Well, yeah, there was the two appetizers was the bacon and the cheese, but and the dates. The second appetizer was the red peppers, roasted red
yes.
peppers with goat cheese.
Yeah.
Right. I would say... I'm going towards a Cab Franc. I'll tell you why. A Cab Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon have a tendency to have that kind of peppery green pepper or just red pepper notes to it. So you kind of compare those similar flavors. But I like Cab Franc because it's really high in acid again. Really, when you're pairing food, you want to look for wines with high acid, especially cheesy wines or cheesy foods. So Cab Franc, which could be tough to find. If not, you could even go with a Spanish wine because of that paprika. I think that might work quite nicely. The paprika is going to, any kind of alcohol is going to really intensify the spice on that too. So check out alcohol levels because the higher it is, the more that paprika is going to come through. It might change mm-hmm. How much paprika you put on the dish. Yeah. And then Indian food, depending on what kind of Indian food you eat, but probably there's some spice to it. You really want to steer clear of red wines. It's not to say you can't. You just don't want to have tannin. Tannin is that sensation in a red wine that makes your mouth dry. So steer clear of those. A way to do that is to have a Pinot Noir or a Beaujolais. Those are two easy to find reds. But whites work fantastically, and especially some with maybe just a touch of sugar. Again, maybe a Riesling or a white blend is really popular now. Those work quite nicely with it. That would probably be the easy ones to find that I would go with.
Wonderful. Thank you, Becky, for calling. And Jessica, boy, the time flew. Thank you so
much. It did. Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. I always have so much fun with you guys.
Well, you'll come back and be with us again?
You bet. And next time I'm bringing wine.
Ah, that sounds great. Thanks, Jess.
All right.
Jessica Bell is the founder and CEO of My Wine School. It's based in Chicago and Milwaukee. We have a link to her business up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So you can just go there and get that link. She's does a great job. She talked to us from our Milwaukee studios today. So that was really a lot of fun and wonderful to talk about wine with her. And I guess it's mywineschool.com is the place to go. Jessica Bell of mywineschool.com. Coming up next, we'll change gears, talk about Apple computers. Do you have that new iPhone 5 on order yet? Joe Rhodes may or may not. He'll know a lot about it, and he'll talk with us about the iPhone 5 and a whole lot of other things relating to Apple. Next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.